Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, hearing the voice of God. Our guest expert is the Reverend Mike Wilson. I'll tell you more about him in a moment, but first, my monologue. I've often heard people say, in Christ's stead, I have no hands but yours. In other words, we must do his work here on earth. St. Teresa of Avila, in her poem, Christ Has No Body, puts it this way, and I quote, Christ has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks, compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands, yours are the feet, yours are the eyes. You are his body. Christ has no body now but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on the world. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. Grace and peace. End quote. I would ask, yours are the lips, the tongue, and the mouth that speaks goodness into the world. Think of this. In all you do, work is really the best prayer. To hear his voice, we must first recognize him in other people. Not always an easy thing to do. Several years ago, I decided I would see Christ in at least one person every day and say a prayer for that person that evening. Maybe it was the teenager who packed my groceries. Maybe it was the driver who slowed to let me into traffic. Or could it be that driver who blew his horn and cut me off? It was a learning experience. Jesus said, love your enemy. I really don't believe I have any enemies, but there are a few people who seem to try their best to tick me off. So I try to see Christ in them and offer them a prayer. Not always easy. Today I've shortened my monologue to give our special guest, Mike Wilson, more time to tell us how he saw Christ and heard his voice in a very difficult situation and how he has made the best of it being the hands, the feet, and the body of Christ. I'm excited to share Pastor Mike's compelling story. Mike was born and raised in Knoxville, Tennessee, and earned his bachelor's degree in religious studies from the University of Cumberland. Following college, he studied at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, and the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He was ordained in Horse Creek Baptist Church in Corbin, Kentucky. He and his wife, Missy, have been married for 25 years and have four sons and two daughters, aged 5 to 23. When in Nashville, they worship at the Church of the City. He is known for his work with kids and families in Haiti. Mike used to work in this very building when it was a Baptist church. Welcome, Mike, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org.
Thank you so much, Dr. Parr.
Thank you, Mike. It's a great pleasure to have you on our show. Mike, some time ago, you remember, you told me that before you graduated from the seminary, your son Lane was born, and your entire life changed. I suspect that was the beginning of your compelling story. I would like you to start our show by telling our listeners about your very special son and how you and Missy found fulfillment and joy in his life. Take as much time as you need.
Thank you so much, and thank you for allowing me to be a part of this. Thank you for the opportunity to tell the story of Lane and where we see God's eyes every day. So our story is rather unique. Like a lot of people, we thought we would be the perfect family with 2.5 kids and a white picket fence and maybe a dog down the line, but definitely a minivan and on our vacations. And In 1997, Missy was pregnant with our second child. We had what we thought at that time was the perfect first child. Our son Dylan was typically developing. Everything was going perfectly well, and we were well on our way to a second healthy pregnancy. And then all of a sudden, Missy went into labor. And out of a 40-week pregnancy, she delivered our son Lane at 23 weeks and 5 days gestationally. So he was born 1 pound and 4 ounces, wow. 590 grams. Now, to put that in something that the listeners can visualize, 2 full soda cans weigh about 595 grams.
Yep.
So he weighed less than 2 full soda cans. His head was about the size of a tennis ball. His kneecaps were the size of plain M&Ms, not the big peanut kind. And his skin literally looked like you could hold him up to a light and see through it. And so we watched our son develop in a hospital where he was born. He was born in Knoxville, Tennessee, and the hospital was East Tennessee Children's. And we watched him go from 1 pound and 4 ounces to, when he eventually came home 5 months later, a little over 5 pounds. But during that process, we saw so many things that could have gone wrong, that could have killed him, but couldn't, but didn't. For instance, Lane had a stroke sometime during his birth, either before, during, or right after, where the right side of his brain was completely destroyed. It's called an intraventricular hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. It's a stage 4. Mm-hmm. Later on, Lane developed something called retinopathy of prematurity because he was on oxygen for so long and such a high concentration mm-hmm. of oxygen. His eyes did not develop. His retinas actually detached. And so today, if you look at Lane on paper, you see a child who's had a stroke, who has cerebral palsy, who has mental retardation. You see a child that's blind, and immediately you say, "Oh, I'm so sorry." But I always tell people, until you meet him, you think that. But once you meet him, you find someone who truly is the most social, nonverbal person you'll ever meet. In fact, he's, over the last few years, he has gotten more and more engaging with people, so that if he hears an unknown voice, he will immediately begin to cry out, "Hello, hello, hello," until you respond to him. And he is just full of life. And part of what I would tell you and what I would tell everybody else out there is, that's what I believe joy looks like. It's not defined by circumstances. It's not defined by good or bad. It's what's filling inside of us. And so I've watched, God bless my son, through a life that many times I would have seen as, that's not fair. And so today, Lane lives with us in the country of Haiti, where we live full time. And he is a part of our local community, our village, if you will, of about 3,000 people. So God gave us a son who was born early. Through his little bitty beginnings, has completely allowed us to now be a part of changing an entire community, an entire region, and eventually an entire country.
I want you to tell me about that in a minute. But first of all, you know, as I see it, you saw Christ mm-hmm. in Lane.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you see Christ, all those other things don't matter.
Exactly.
And you heard his voice. And you've been able to help others see Christ as their friends, relatives, and others. And What happens? What do people say when you tell them this story?
If they've never seen Lane, or if they've never met him, the first reaction is always the same: "I'm so sorry." And as humans, a lot of times, especially as Americans, we feel like it's our job to apologize for something bad that's happened that no one really had control over. To this day, they've never been able to tell why my wife went into premature labor.
Well, I'm sure I said that same thing when you first told my story. I know I did.
You did. No, well, it's very common. Yeah, and it's especially from every person. There's this innate part of our humanity that says, "Oh, I'm so sorry." That's not the way it's supposed to be. But what we've seen is this nature that's within him that's so pure, and it's so, the only way I can describe it, it's so godly. And he doesn't get caught up in the things that you and I get caught up in. And what I tell them is, once you meet him, you'll understand why I'm so proud of him. You'll understand why I don't see him as that child that's been cast aside mm-hmm. or we've been cursed with, like some would say, especially where we live in Haiti. I see him as God's blessing that's led us to see a bigger vision of who God is.
That's so amazing. When when we first talked mm-hmm. several years ago, you said that you're starting this foundation called My Life Speaks mm-hmm. because your life speaks through him.
Yes.
Is that right?
So, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, that's true for everybody. Your life's telling a story. Now, you and I know this, that mm-hmm. we like to sometimes try to tell a different story mm-hmm. with our mouths mm-hmm. than our lives really do say.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, I may say one thing, but if you want to know the real truth of who I am, ask my kids. Because they, unfortunately, they're really, really honest about Dad.
Or your wife.
Don't ask my wife. But that's so true because they see us and they know. Lane's life spoke volumes to us, even from a hospital bed at 1 pound, 2 pounds, 3 pounds, because he never gave up. And even though he was intubated and he had a tube in his throat and I couldn't hear his voice for months, there was something about him that I saw his life that just refused to give up. And I've always told people, I've watched a child develop outside the womb and I saw what a fighter he is. Mm-hmm. I saw how God had given him the desire to live. And there's no way to not see God's hand on it from where I stood mm-hmm. and where I stand today.
Mm-hmm. And when you ask people to self-inspect, and you ask yes. me that, what does your life speak? What do they tell you?
I get a lot of blank stares sometimes. I get a lot of mumbles and, I'm a good person. Mm-hmm. But what I try to do is I want to deflect from, you don't have to have the right answer today, but I want you to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to be cognizant of your life is telling a story. If you tell me you believe in this, then you should act that way. And so whether it's, I tell you, Par, I'm the biggest soccer fan on the planet, and you start asking me questions about soccer and I can't answer them, mm-hmm. you know I'm not telling the truth. Mm-hmm. But if I say that God is my source and God is my strength and God is the strong tower that I run into, but I'm immediately pulling things back to me when there's trouble, or I'm immediately accepting all the praise and the glory, then I'm not really living that way. It's kind of the put
it's
up or shut
hard,
up.
Isn't it?
It is. It's very hard.
Yeah. Well, now you have three children whom you adopted
yes.
from Haiti. Can
yes.
you tell us about them, how that happened?
I can. So it all started because I made the mistake of taking my wife to Haiti for the first time. I jokingly say that, but when we got there, like many Americans, she was such a control, fix-it person. She did not want to be in a place where she couldn't fix things, where she saw things that were quote-unquote unfixable. And by the end of the week, she had seen a culture and a group of people who were so pure and raw that she looked at me and said, there's something special about here. We should adopt one day. And very quickly, I looked at her and said, we have three boys. One of them has special needs. We get a special place in heaven for all the things we've been through. Let's not even think about that. And then as I was reading scripture one day, I came to Romans, and it talks about us being adopted into the family of Christ. It's hard to not read that, and especially when I have this voice of my wife in the background playing. And we said, okay, let's look at this journey. And so we started the process in 2009 of adopting a little girl from Haiti. In that moment, we met her, we knew immediately. And I tell people, it's so crazy. We walked into this room, and the director of this orphanage said, your daughter's in here. And I asked, which one is she? And he said, I don't know. You tell me which one. And it was the most gut-wrenching moment of my life.
Yeah.
But immediately when my daughter Tia came around the corner, I knew. It was the same thing that when my biological children were born, it was the same thing. But there was this other little girl that I could not stop thinking, but it's her too. And that's when Missy stood up and said, whoa, just one. We can't adopt two. We have three children, remember?
Yeah.
And we kept praying. And toward the end of 2009, we said, this little girl, she's ours. She's supposed to be ours. We have to be a part of her story. And on January the 7th of 2010, we were in Haiti and we signed the papers to start a second adoption for Naika. And we had been around her and our daughter Tia since July of 2009. And you know what happened? January the 12th, 2010, magnitude 7 earthquake hit Haiti. And I was fortunate enough to get in the day after the earthquake hit. A friend of mine was able to secure us seats on a medical evacuation jet the Canadian Air Force landed first, the Navy SEALs landed second, and here come these crazy preacher guys from Tennessee into the country. And we got to my daughter's the next day, and I realized I never want to let them go. Mm-hmm. And through, you know, we talked a little bit about miracles before we started this, through something I can only describe as a miracle, a man started asking some questions, and a reporter picked up the story, and it showed on TV screens all across America. And within 72 hours, I'm standing at the embassy where someone had made a call on my behalf, and that person had called somebody, and that person had called somebody, and that person had called the embassy and said, I have the power. Let's get this little girl home. And we thought we would finish Tia's adoption first, and then Naika would come home probably a year later. 1 week to the day after the earthquake, Tia came home. And 1 week to the day after that, Naika came home. So my daughters came into our family understanding from day one that God had built them for our family. But they had a really difficult time when they met my son, Lane. And so they would come into the house and they would stand at the threshold of the door and they would not even enter the door to his room because the Haitian culture has taught for years that if you're different, if you have any kind of deformity or disability, or you've got any kind of difference whatsoever, then you are truly disposable. You are cursed. And so—
How old were they at that time?
They were 5 and 6, almost 7. And so when they came home in January of 2010, it took almost a full year for us to be able to put everybody together. Now, part of it was every time Tia spoke to Lane, he reached over and grabbed her hair because he knew it drove her crazy. And he would pull her hair and he would grab Naika and pinch her nose. And he was just trying to figure them out as well as them trying to understand him. But there was a moment, part, and again, I see God's hand in so many random places. There's a moment when we had been at the park playing and I came and I took Lane and I put him in his room and I went to get the other stuff out of our minivan because that's what we had. Yeah. And my wife called me and said, Mike, you've got to come in here. And I walked into Lane's room and Naika is sitting in the floor, legs crossed with Lane's head in her lap. And she is stroking his face and she is singing some song. I don't even know what language she was singing in. She was singing to him and she was stroking his face. And when she got done, she would take her hands and she would just slap him as hard as she could on the cheeks. And then he would reach up with his good arm and he would pull her as close to his head as he could. And he would kiss her and then he would flip her over him. Oh. And I'm standing at the door watching this happen. And it happened time and time and time again. And on the third time, I said, guys, stop. You're going to hurt each other. And Naika looked at me with the most pure heart. And she said, Dad, it's okay. He's my brother. He's just different. And in that moment, I look and here's Naika on the floor with Lane. Here's Tia sitting on the other side of Lane. And my daughters have not only entered into his room, but they've entered into a relationship with their brother. And so we've seen some amazing things.
Well, I guess you have. we see so many parents, and I've seen it, and I'm sure you have too, when they have a difficulty in the family, like mm-hmm. the kid dies of leukemia, for example, in the case I know of, or the kid has a car accident and is paralyzed in some mm-hmm. part, the stress drives them apart.
Yes.
How did you maintain your relationship with Missy?
So I know that happens. We saw that happen mm-hmm. while our son was in the neonatal intensive mm-hmm. care unit, mm-hmm. the NICU,
sure.
for those 5 months. We saw families split. And we looked at each other and said, we have to be in this together. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds very simple and sometimes silly, but we had that conversation of, we are in this together. This is our son. This is our life. And we made a promise, no matter what, he would always be included in our life together. So if we are going somewhere, he's going with us. Mm-hmm. We're not going to change our life for him. Instead, we're not going to change our life because of him. We're going to change our life for him. And those hard moments, for instance, when Lane was 5 years old, he had a massive seizure and he wound up in the hospital. And overnight, his body went into shock, and we woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sleeping in his little room on those little chairs, to 11 people in the room on a code situation where people are running and they're doing their best. And we just looked at each other standing out in the hallway after we were ushered out and said, what do we do? And 2 weeks later, we're sitting in a restaurant looking at each other, and neither one of us could eat. And I remember my wife looked at me and said, this is a whole lot more difficult than I thought it would ever be. And her being strong enough to look at me in the face and say, this is hard, it freed up everything for me to look at her and say, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was a bad parent. I thought it was my fault that I'm dealing with this. And so it forced us to have communication. You talked about, we've been married for 25 years. It's not an easy journey, but I wouldn't trade it for anything because it's brought us closer together. It's forced me to look at my wife like Paul describes. I'm supposed to love my wife like Christ loved the church and give myself up for her. I don't always want to do that, Par. I don't. I love her, but I want sometimes her to do some things for me.
Yeah.
But then I turn around and look and see all the things that she's done for me that I'm so focused on me, I don't even see. And it's a give and take. It's, beautiful picture. It's a dance. So what I would say is, I know there's somebody out there right now listening who thinks they're the only one going through this, mm-hmm. and you're not. No. You are not alone.
That's why God gave men, women.
Yes.
Women, men.
And quite honestly, the hardest thing in my background being a pastor, you feel like you have to be perfect. And that's just a lie. That is an absolute lie, because there's no one listening. There's no one in this room. There's no one out on the road today that's perfect. But yet we've bought the lie that we have to present the perfect, and I would call it today the Instagram life, where I only show you the pretty pictures. I don't show you the sweat and the red face and things like that.
The Christmas letter.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Mike, you've done other things now in Haiti. You just don't go there and just kidnap these kids and bring them home. Tell us what else you've done in Haiti.
So that was actually just the beginning of our Haiti journey. When we adopted our girls, as my wife would tell you, if she were here, she would say, we thought that would fill the Haiti-sized hole in our heart. But instead, all it did was uncover the fact that we needed Haiti as much as Haiti needed us. And what I mean by that is, we had to declutter who we were. You hear about the American dream, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you sell out to that instead of the one who's providing, it's an issue. So we went to Haiti, and we started asking questions. We started looking for kids specifically that looked like our son, Lane. And we were taking short-term trips, going in on a Saturday and leaving on a Saturday. There was a ministry there we were partnering with, and we never saw those kids. And then finally, after some time, we got a chance to finally see some kids with special needs. And we realized the parents loved them, but they were petrified, because voodoo said, again, you're cursed. Mm-hmm. It's your fault. It's no different than what the disciples asked Jesus in John chapter 9, whose fault is it that this man is blind? And then Jesus just gives the answer of, well, it's nobody's fault. It's so the glory of God can be seen. Mm-hmm. And so we started looking, and we found a place where there were 38 individuals with special needs in a house in Haiti up in the hills. And by house, I mean a concrete block structure that was about 1,300 square feet with one bathroom. And there were three adults there taking care of them. And they were from babies all the way up through adults with severe special needs. But they were doing their best to love these individuals. And Missy and I looked at each other and said, if God's calling us to do this, we don't want to put people away. We want to include them in families. And so what we did is, in 2012, we started with the plan of, we're going to create families in Haiti. So we partnered with the government, and we created a foster care system. And that foster care system that didn't exist in Haiti at the time and really doesn't exist countrywide, we take children that the government places with us, typically developing children and special needs children, and we place them in Haitian homes with a Haitian mom and a Haitian dad. And then they'll grow up alongside biological children of that family. And our goal is to eventually have national Haitian adoption, mm-hmm. so a Haitian can adopt a Haitian child. But until that happens, we now have 22 children growing up in five different families, but there are so many other kids in the family because mom and dad have biological kids and they've got cousins that live there and different things. It's putting kids in families. And so from that, we've now expanded to, how do we keep kids from being given away? I'll tell you a quick story of a young lady named Jezela who showed up at our gate one day with two children, a little baby on her hip and a little toddler. And she said, these are my sister's kids, and I can't take care of them. Well, the real story was, those were her two biological children. She was pregnant with a third. Her husband, or the man that she had the other children with had died after the earthquake, and the man that she was now pregnant with his child was abusive to her. And she was just trying to get rid of the children because she saw no hope. And we worked with Jezela for a month to do everything we could to help her see the worth of her children. Well, she actually today, fast forward 7.5 years, today Jezela works in our kitchen. She's one of our kitchen staff. She's one of the ones that cook almost 100,000 meals every year on our campus. But when a mom shows up that's lost hope, Jezela is one of the first people to show up there. And she's one of the first people to look at that mom and say, you can do it. Don't give up. Don't give up on these kids. And Jezela took her money and built a house for her family. And she's taking care of her kids. And she's taking care of neighbors' kids because she sees the importance of families working together.
Well, Mike, I could go on listening to your talk all day. I'm sure we're almost out of time.
I know.
Mike, you are living St. Teresa's poem, aren't you?
Mm, that's a compliment.
You are Christ's body. You're doing his work. And you're now Christ's mouth, his lips. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time. It's been a great pleasure having you here, Mike.
Thank you.
And it's a pleasure to our listeners, too, I'm sure. So thank you very much. And thank you, our listeners, for listening to Parenting Matters on WBOU-FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Thanks for coming, Mike, and thank you, our listeners. Now, before I sign off, one quick story. This one, not a personal story. Usually finish with a personal story, but this one is from Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 to 40. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, escorted by all the angels, then he will take his seat on his throne of glory. All nations will be assembled before him, and he will separate people one from another as the shepherd separates sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you whom my Father has blessed, take as your heritage the kingdom prepared for you since the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you made me welcome. Lacking clothes, you clothed me. Sick, and you visited me. In prison, and you came to see me. Then the upright will say to him in reply, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and make you welcome, lacking clothes and clothe you? When did we find you sick or in prison and go to see you? And the king will answer, in truth, I tell you, insofar as you have done this to one of the least of my brothers, you did it to me. Now for your homework, get your family together and go to www.parenting-matters.com and listen to this show again. Discuss with each other how they are the body of Christ and ask them what they have done to merit being on the king's right. Then discuss ways your family can see Christ in others, hear his voice, and become more like him. Then go back to parentingmatters.com, parenting-matters.com, click on homework, and tell us in a comment about your family's discussion. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know, and we'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.